Today is Wednesday, January 15th, and this is Worth the Binge, the show where Aubrey
and Jeff
talk about the shows that are worth binging. In this series, we are talking about the show Severance. This is the second episode in this series, and we are happy to be finishing up season one with this episode, and then moving to an episode per episode basis for season two.
Can't believe it's only 2 days away till that happens.
Yeah. No, I know you don't want to wait. You literally asked me today if you could watch it without me, since I have to work that night. And then we're like, haha, just joking.
Mm-hmm. I'm so excited. I can't help it.
Mm-hmm. Like, we share the podcast together, but can't apparently share watching the show together.
We'll probably be watching it a couple more times anyway for the podcast, so. Unless you don't think so.
You might, but you might as well wait for me.
That's true.
I'm the one who decides how many ums of yours gets to stay in this audio.
Oh, no.
So, do with that what you will. All right, we're going to go ahead into episode 5 of season 1.
Episode 5 of Severance is called The Grim Barbarity of Optics and Design. The synopsis of this episode: Irving and Dylan confront Bert. The team ventures out into the hallways.
What will they find in these hallways?
We shall find out. 5 starts off with Audi Helly waking up to find out that she is hanging from the elevator and tries to save herself. We also see Mark getting ready to go to the elevator to clock out. He is the first one to find Helly's body hanging and immediately tries to help her. We then see Grainer, who is rushing down the hallway.
Moving faster than I thought he could.
Yep, and he finds Mark, who is trying to get Helly down from the elevator. When Grainer gets to the elevator, he takes Helly's body from Mark and pushes Mark into the elevator. And Mark is pretty much devastated.
Yeah, really distraught.
Asking if he's okay, but then ends up losing consciousness as he goes down the elevator.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's probably some level of guilt, even if it wasn't his fault. I mean, you want to, you know, he's the manager. He's the one who's kind of been trying to help her through her time there. And it.
Yeah. I can't even imagine. So then we cue the intro music, the theme song for Severance. Then the next morning, we see Innie Mark coming back to work, and we still see his face in a panic because that's the last thing he saw before he left the last day. When the doors open, he sees Milchick waiting for him as he gets off of the elevator. This was a very awkward scene.
Yeah.
Where he's kind of in panic, but they're just sitting there stone-faced like they normally are.
Yeah, they didn't act like it was, you know, nearly as important or impactful as a moment as you would normally think if something like that happened at your job.
Mm-hmm. So then Mark says, is Helly retiring? And Cobell's like, nope, she'll be back in a couple days.
Yeah, that's.
And Helly, she said that Helly's Audi has no plan on leaving.
Awful.
Yeah.
I don't know how you could deal with that if you're the person, you know, if you're the Audi and you're. Wouldn't you be afraid, even if you thought you should be there, wouldn't you be afraid that your any version of you is going to kill you?
Yeah. We then cut to Grainer, who is meeting Cobell in her office. And he brings Petey's chip to Cobell, saying that she was right and that his memories were reintegrated.
Yeah, and she then was supposed to take that to the board.
Mm-hmm.
But but chose to wait until she had more information. Or at least that's what she was saying. She might have been...
Mm-hmm.
There might be some ulterior motives in play there.
And she wants Grainer to run some more tests on it before she gives it to the board, too.
Yeah.
So after that, we see Mark, who secretly takes Rickon's book into the bathroom for their favorite reading spot to read the book. And I love this montage that they give of Mark reading the book, and we get to hear, is his name Michael Chernus? Is that the actor's name?
That sounds right, but I couldn't tell you.
We get to hear the actor that plays Rickon reading some of the lines of the book, and they are just hysterical.
I kind of want this book to be real. I kind of want it to take home and read.
I think it is. I think you can order it.
Really? My birthday's coming up.
Okay, I know what to get you then. I wrote down some of these lines that are in the book. I loved, bullies are nothing but bulls and lies. And what separates man from machines is that machines cannot think for themselves. Also, they are made of metal, whereas man is made of skin.
That's a good point.
And at the center of industry is dust.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably not wrong, although dust is probably at the center of a lot of things, but also at the center of industry.
The word dust is literally in industry.
Yeah. No, I know, but it's... I'm just saying the point of it being the double meaning, it's, you know, dust is everywhere. So he's right.
Yeah. One day Mark clocks out to find several messages from Rickon, his brother-in-law, saying that Devin is getting ready to give birth.
That's a big moment.
And I love how Rickon says, if this is any Mark, can you let Audi Mark know?
Yeah, like any Mark gets the messages too.
Yeah. So Mark speeds to these birthing cabins that they have that Rickon and Devin are having their baby at. He runs into Alexa, the midwife who he had a date with that it didn't end very well.
Yeah, that we failed to mention in the the previous episode. But yeah, did not end so well. That's true. A question about the cabins. So Alexa was there.
Mm-hmm.
Mark was there. Rickon was there. Devin was there. Where's the parents? Where's Mark and Devin's parents?
That's a good question.
Or like any other family.
I never thought about that. I remember them talking about stories about when they were younger, but they never really say what happened to their parents at all.
Or even like Rickon's.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just thought it was a little bit weird. Not a single other person was there.
Yeah, that is very weird. We get to hear Rickon ask about Mark if he read his book. He feels very hurt that Mark hasn't said anything about it yet. And Mark responds that it must have been stolen because he did not get it.
It's cool to see him reading it, but not knowing that he's reading it.
So then we get to... Rickon has a line right after this that is hysterical. He says, the fetus is drawn to clear air. Purging secrets can create a soul void that speeds the labor. So he wants Mark to tell him a secret. And Mark kind of makes a joke and asks if a soul void is something they want to create in the presence of their child.
Sounds like someone's getting ready to cast a spell.
I know. It's very weird. So then Devin wants some air after this last contraction she had and wants some coffee. So she goes to find some coffee and meets a wealthy woman who is also giving birth. She asks if she can have some of this woman's coffee, and she says yes, and she finds out this lady is named Gabby, who has 3 children, and she hopes to name this one William.
It's a, you know, it's a decent name, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as sweet as Rickon, but...
Rickon is a pretty cool name. Left alone at the cabin, Mark and Rickon talk about Mark's wife, and Rickon wants to name the baby after Mark's dead wife, and Mark shares that he probably shouldn't do that. The baby should have its own name because he doesn't want the baby to have a name that's so sad.
Yeah, he said, no big feely baggage.
Yeah.
For taking the middle name.
Mm.
At the cabin is also where I think my cinematic shot of this episode is when Mark is sitting on the dock right before the child is born, and the way it shows that background there of him just complete solitude, even though he has friends and family nearby, or at least known people. I don't know if he calls Rickon a friend or not, but mm-hmm. I guess Rickon's still family. And that he, you know, he's still by himself, even as close as he is to them in proximity, but how much he is still just alone.
Yeah. He's, during this part, he's also having some flashbacks of Petey, and seeing his last final moments and the phone that's ringing in his basement. which that mixed with Devin screaming and with labor pains in the background was all really an interesting shot that they did.
Yeah, raising the tension and anxiety there.
Yeah. So then we go back to Lumen, and it's Helly's first day back after the suicide attempt. Mark sits down with Milchick, and they talk about it being Helly's first day back, and that Mark needs to show her kind eyes. And I love this part because Adam Scott does such a great job at overdoing his kind eyes that they look creepy.
Yeah, you got a super kick out of that.
Yeah, I did. It was hilarious. And then Milchick walks him to the elevator to get Helly, and the elevator opens, and we see her on the floor as her innie is awakening for the first time after this suicide attempt. Mark tries to ask her if she's okay, and she really doesn't want to talk about it.
I wouldn't either.
Yeah. And she kind of just walks away from him as they're sitting together. We see Miss Casey come and observe Helly in the office today, which is the first time we see Miss Casey kind of out of her office. She gets sent there by Cobell just to take notes on her and make sure that she's okay. We see Irving now have some more hallucinations with his black goo, and he decides that he wants to go visit Bert for comfort.
Yeah, I'm not sure that we mentioned Bert in the last episode either. We did a very poor job of some of the side characters. But Bert works with optics and design, and there was a painting, and that's actually where this episode title comes from, is from that painting, The Grim Barbarity of Optics and Design, that was spreading around, and then this painting was actually shown a couple different ways, showing like it was optics and design, who were very violent to some people, and then showing like it was macro data refinement to other people, like they were the violent ones in this weird history that I'm not sure is real. I'm not sure that it's not. But yeah, that's where this episode title comes from. And the optics and design team helps create all the art for around the area
and put it up around the basement.
Yeah, it seems weird to have a whole department for that, but, you know, that seems kind of like the cake job to me.
Mm-hmm. We see Irving at the copier because he's going to print a map off for Mark, so in case he gets lost. Instead of the map coming out of the printer, it's this weird painting that you were just talking about.
Yep.
Where it shows the optics and design team slaughtering the MDR team, which is crazy. And they call that the O&D coup that Dylan talks about all the time. Milchick pops up behind him and tells him he sent it to this copier by mistake, denying that the coup and the paintings are a joke. Dylan and Irving kind of argue about this painting and what it means. And Dylan thinks it is ironclad proof that the coup is real and that O&D can't be trusted. Milchick goes back to Cobell, and Cobell says, "You ran a 266 on Irving B?" And he says, "Yep." Milchick says he thought it would dissuade Irving from spending so much time with Bert.
And the idea that they have names and numbers for these things that they're doing to the team members there, to me, speaks a lot about how much of this is like psychological. It's like you ran this type of mission on them, the 266.
266. But we never hear about any other mission names or numbers or anything like that.
That's true, but we know there's at least 265 other ones.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so we go back to Mark and Helly and Miss Casey in the office, and Mark spills some drink on Miss Casey's notebook, trying to get her out of the way so Helly can be by herself because Miss Casey's been...
Yeah, just hovering over her.
Hovering over her, yeah. Miss Casey says she needs to go back and get some more notebooks and that Helly should come with her. And Mark says, "I can watch her. It's only going to be a couple minutes." And I love Miss Casey's face. She goes, "It's 8 minutes, round trip." She is just so concerned with the time.
But also impressive that she knew the exact time.
Yeah, it... So impressive with that. It was hilarious. Once Miss Casey leaves, Mark asks Helly if he's shown her where the pin caps are stored. They just have a pin cap storage at home, which is super weird. But we know this is an attempt for Mark to get Helly out of the office for a little bit. She at first doesn't want to and then decides to go, and we come to this part of the basement that's covered with plastic where Mark shows Helly the map that he's been recreating from the one he ripped up earlier.
This feels like that Neo moment in The Matrix when Morpheus says he's beginning to believe. Like Mark is finally starting to see some weird stuff going on enough to the point where he thinks they should do something about it.
Yeah. And then Helly gives the great line of, "I'm not your new PD. I don't want to do this."
Yeah. But I am super pumped about this walk that they go on. Because I talked about optics and design having the cake job. I'm not sure that's true. Because we got a dude built like bottle feeding goats.
Yeah, he is... so concerned when he sees them walk in and he...
They're not ready yet.
They're not ready. Get out.
Get out. And no further explanation. We get nothing else.
Nothing else.
Yeah.
We get a little bit of Mark and Helly kind of discussing what they think the goats are for. Like they think they're refining the goats at one point. But we never really... We don't really know any more facts about it.
Yeah.
So, Miss Casey's on the way back to MDR, and she passes the conference room and sees Bert in there. He's pacing and talking to himself, and she walks almost all the way by him and then stops, turns and looks at him, and then just keeps on walking. Like, she's kind of confused, but she just doesn't know what she thinks about it, so she keeps on walking. And then she comes back to find Mark and Helly gone. And so she goes to find them. But before she goes and finds them, she turns to Irving and says, "Hey, Bert's in the conference room." I don't know how she would know that Irving would care about that.
Yeah, I mean, maybe she's got video evidence of them hanging out or something. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. It just seemed kind of odd to me. So then we see Irving going to the conference room to find Bert. He gets there, opens the door, starts talking to them, and then comes running around the corner is Dylan, who shuts the door and locks the door with his belt.
Yeah. Vigilante policeman style.
He's like, he says, "He was coming at you, bro." he had to protect Irving, and Irving tries to go call for a manager, waving at the cameras, and we get to see a view of the camera screens, but it doesn't seem like anybody's in there watching them at all. Dylan kind of detects some flirting between these two, and he takes Irving to the side and says, "Are you sweet on this guy?" And he has no care in the world about the rules of there being no office romances. He's more concerned because he hates O&D, and he does not want him to be in love with an O&D person.
Yeah, anyone else, he would have been fine.
Yeah, anybody else. He just hates O&D.
Then the team all kind of meets back at Macro Data Refining, and kind of goes over the new information that all of them have. You know, they've trapped someone from the other opposing squad, and there's goats now, and they want to figure out what all this means.
I did have some observations that I wanted to share with you.
Yeah.
So I started noticing around this point, when we see someone that we know works in the severed place outside of Lumen, that the theme music starts to play.
Oh, wow.
And I noticed the theme music playing at the cabin, but at the bigger, richy, castle-like cabin that was next door.
Interesting.
I also noticed this episode that everybody we see that works in each department has a badge. Like the MDR people, they have blue badges. The O&D people have green badges. And Miss Casey doesn't wear a badge. So I don't know if it's just because she's in her own little space. She's not really in a department, but she doesn't have one, so maybe that'll come in later.
Yeah, I don't know what that. I don't know what that would mean either. So those are some interesting observations that I did not observe. But yeah, maybe we will find out more as we look into future episodes, starting now with episode 6.
Episode 6. The title is Hide and Seek. The team angers Cobell by forming an alliance.
We start this episode in Cobell's basement. It is one of the more unique settings and sequences in the show, at least in my opinion. She's got a severance chip around her neck. And that's already weird. And there's also like this shrine that she is kneeling at that's candlelit, filled with Egan memorabilia, photos, artifacts. And she is basically praying this prayer. And then there's a photo of a young girl. And it is listed there with this like hospital band for Charlotte Cobell. And it's just weird. It's super weird.
Super weird.
We don't really get much feedback on what any of that means, other than there's some ties outside of the workplace. Mm-hmm. Mark then heads into his basement and picks up the phone that Petey had left there. He had known it was there. He had seen it before and kind of packed it away. Mm-hmm. Somehow this thing still has battery.
Yeah, I don't understand. It's been probably several days, maybe a couple weeks.
Yeah, I mean, flip phones back in the day did have longer batteries, but still feels like this one should have been dead. And there's no way Mark had the charging cable for this thing. Mm-hmm. Because they were always this weird, like, snap-in plastic little, you know, weird charging cable. So it's like, no way he charged it. But suspension of disbelief. Sure, it's charged. We get it. At Lumen, however, Bert is introducing Irving to the room he found with plants and kind of being their like secret special area just for them. But they almost kiss there. Mm-hmm. Like there's high emotion, but they have that tender moment and then they break apart.
This is the scene I paused because I thought there were people in the background, but it was just a mirror.
Yeah. Plants in there and then a bunch of mirrors.
It's weird.
So I don't know if it was to help spread the artificial sunlight in there to keep the plants going.
That's an interesting thought. I don't know.
I think they should have used Brondo. It's what plants crave.
Brondo? What is Brondo?
I'll have to show you one
Okay.
day. So... Devin is then walking around with her newborn in the park, and she sees the woman that she saw at the birthing camp, which, by the way, that's weird. Like, birthing cabins? I think it's weird. Is that weird? Am I wrong?
I think it's weird as well. I've never heard of them, but I've never heard of them.
I mean, more power to them. Like, I kind of get, like, a single family doing it, but, like, where it's an area known for that, mm-hmm. we just go here to pop babies out. That's all this is.
That's all it is.
But she sees her, and she goes up to talk to her, but the lady does not remember Devin at all.
Suspicious.
And when she talks to the baby then has a different name than what she said she was going to name it.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
Yeah. It seems like this lady is severed. Mm-hmm. Like she's forgetting things.
Yeah, kind of like my music theory from last episode.
Yeah, which makes me think that maybe it's not so much people that work there, but that people who have undergone that transition, that mm-hmm. severance. So back at work, Irving is urging his team to form an alliance with O&D. He wants them to pool the resources so they can better understand what's happening with Lumen. Helly's on board. Dylan and Mark aren't sure. Mark, you know, there's still that little bit of him that wants to be the work guy. Mm-hmm. Dylan, you know, isn't sure because he thinks he is going to get slaughtered by O&D.
They're evil.
Very, you know, very different mindsets there. The crew notices that Miss Casey is missing, and it sounds like it's just because she's now in the break room. So Mark already is feeling bad about that. And in talking to Cobell about that, learning that she's in the break room, Mark asks her what his job is.
I just love the way she just... She's all calm, and then she's like, "We serve care, you child." All up in his face.
Yeah. Dylan is talking to Helly during this same time, and she's asking if she and Mark are actually an item now. And he is convinced that baby goats that they saw actually mean something extracurricular. And if it's just a euphemism, but, you know, he just needs to see the baby goats. They're real and they're cute, but they are not ready yet.
No, but they're not ready and they need to get out of there. Mark comes back and is kind of frustrated and is kind of telling the team about Cobell's new rule. And then Irving kind of apologizes and says, I'm sorry for causing this trouble for you, Mark. And then they decide, Mark decides, what the heck? We're going to go to O&D and we're going to see if we can team up with them.
I think Irving just did that because now he has that emotional impact there with Bert.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just that much more of now he has skin in the game, a reason to kind of go against everything that's going on. Where before he was just, these are the rules, these are what we should follow.
Mm-hmm.
Egan, 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 and
Kier, Kier, Kier.
Yeah.
The MDR crew gets to see O&D's secret back room for the first time, where they see all the other workers that are in there. We get to see they're holding watering cans for some reason, white watering cans.
Which look like they're actually being 3D printed at the machines they're at. So it's not just art that they're making.
Mm-hmm. The two groups decide they're going to talk and try to figure out what they are both doing. Mark says we should get together so we can try to figure out what's really going on in this Lumen basement. While Mark is kind of giving a speech, Dylan kind of sneaks off and grabs a card. It's a green card, I think, that has some instructions on it. I don't think we really see what's on this card, but he puts it in his pocket. Five-finger discount and whatever.
Yeah, it looks like really basic art, kind of like the art you'd have on like a stop, drop, and roll. Like, we don't need words. Mm-hmm. It just needs to be basic. So if you didn't understand the language that's on it, it doesn't matter. You know, stop, drop, and roll. It looked like something similar to that.
Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, Milchick enters O&D and takes everybody back to where they're supposed to be.
They got in trouble.
So Grainer then takes Mark to the break room for starting this little rebellion that they're doing. And while he goes to the break room, we have this long hallway to the break room we talked about last time. And he passes Miss Casey, who is coming out of the break room, and he whispers to her, I'm sorry.
And it's all that he can be.
Mm-hmm. Then we cut to Mark outside of work after he's been in the break room. He's on another date with Alexa, and I was so surprised at how different his demeanor is this time on his date with Alexa. Last time he was drinking. This time it looked like he had water.
Yeah, I didn't notice that, but feels like maybe there's an emotional release because there's a change in him on the other side, maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
I'm also surprised that she gave him another date.
Yeah, me too.
The pickings must be slim for her.
Must be. And Alexa notices that Mark's knuckles are bright red. And Mark brushes it off, saying he got a workplace injury. They told him he got it from moving a water cooler.
Yeah. You do that with your knuckles.
Yeah. Totally weird. So I wonder what happened in that break room.
So then Devin is home, and she's looking for information on Angelo. The guy that she got introduced to as the rich lady's husband, and finds out that he's a senator with a pro-severance platform. So he clearly has ties to Lumen.
Yeah.
So she's interrupted when Rickon announces he's brought in a lactation consultant for an interview.
And as soon as he announces that, we hear the Severance music playing at the theme song.
You get an ear for ear for this.
And surprise, guess who it is?
Well, I already know.
Oh, it's Mrs. Selvig.
Yeah. Or Cobell. Mm-hmm. Or whoever, you know.
Whoever she is.
Whatever her real name is.
She provides her with some skills on how to soothe her baby, and she's singing a Cure hymn.
She's very creepy.
Yeah, super creepy, and apparently all hail Cure to her.
Then we cut to a child sitting in front of a television with his eyes closed, counting to 1,000. We don't know who the kid is, but we find out very shortly that that kid has ties to Dylan, because we see Dylan seated in a closet, and you have Milchick in the closet with him. Super weird scene. Dylan's trying real hard to figure out what in the world's going on. Wait, who is that? You know, like, what's going on? He hears the kid coming in, finds out that he has a kid. I'm a dad, you know, like, that's huge.
It is.
And the bigger reveal, though, is that he can turn the severance. He can flip that switch. It's not just by going up or down that elevator, but that they can do it when they're outside, bring their innie back up or wake him up.
I felt like that was such a big, like, plot twist, because we just assumed it was that elevator doing all the work. And then I remember the first time we watched it, and you were like, holy crap.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that changes everything. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, what else can they do? What else can be done? Is there a third version of them?
Yeah, that's crazy. They call this the overtime contingency, is what Milchick says to him. And he wants to know where he put that little green card that he stole from O&D.
I want to know what number this is. It's not 266.
Yeah.
But it probably has a number.
Probably has a number. Yeah, so Dylan's son, you said, bursts it in and goes to hug Dylan. Dylan has no clue who this little boy is. And he goes, this is my son? Milchick pulls him off. And he gets on the radio and tells whoever he's talking to shut it down.
And he was kind of rough with the kid.
Mm-hmm.
Until after he said shut it down, Dylan came back, and then mm-hmm. he was really sweet with the kid.
Yeah.
So.
Sus.
Yeah.
After Mark and Alexa's dinner date, they attend a punk rock concert. On the whim, because he sees someone he knows on the poster, and it turns out to be Petey's daughter, June. They briefly make awkward conversation after the show is over, and then Mark and Alexa kiss.
Again, why?
Why?
Like, they did have a little more connection this one. On this date, but still.
Still. Why?
Yeah.
So then we cut to Grainer, who is knocking on Cobell's door, or Mrs. Selvig's door. And he says that he thinks he knows who reintegrated Petey. He thinks it's Rigabi, whoever that is.
Yeah, it sounds like maybe a former employee.
Okay.
So Mark grabs Petey's phone again, and it rings, and it is Rigabi ringing the phone, which I thought was kind of crazy. Like, why did they just keep calling over and over and over and over, over. And over and over
and over?
Like, especially once it felt like they knew Petey was dead.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was probably enough time passed, they probably would have known Petey was dead.
It was in the paper, too.
Yeah.
They don't get the paper?
And they just kept calling a phone number of a dead guy? Like, I mean, I guess we had to move the plot, but
yeah.
Other than that, I don't see why that would need to happen, why mm-hmm. they would be calling.
So he decided to go meet Rigabi at this research facility.
And he'll do that in episode 7.
Yeah. Okay, so some things I observed about this episode was that when the group goes to O&D, Dylan has a yellow stain on his shirt that I could not stop staring at. every time he was on camera. And we don't see him eating anything before that, so I have no clue where this yellow stain came from, but it kept bothering me. I guess one more thing is that Owen D talked about how, I don't remember when they said they did it, but instead of the watering cans like they had that time last week or whatever, they made hatchets and took them upstairs or gave them to upstairs.
Yeah, that seems like that would fall right in line with Dylan's theory about the hostile takeover.
So just some odd observations.
And we'll go ahead into episode 7.
Episode 7 is called Defiant Jazz. Mark and the team encounter new security measures from Cobell.
So Mark does go to that research facility, into an underground lab, and she reveals that she is the one who helped out Petey, or maybe helped is really the wrong word, because Petey was going through it, but helped reintegrate Petey. And it doesn't even really come up like she's going to be able to do the same for him, because shortly after, Grainer shows up, and that's not good.
Not good at all.
Yeah, the head of security here to take people down, until Ragabi ends that with the quickness, a bat to the back of the head, violently blow. Taking him down.
How'd she get over there so fast? That's what I want to know. Yeah,
she's doing Krav Maga or something. I mean, she's moving. But yeah, she takes him out. And then kind of just keep swinging for a minute, which was pretty rough. But I guess just making sure the job is done. And Mark does not handle that very well at all. He ready to lose his lunch. But she tells him that he needs to get rid of his clothes immediately just because of any kind of spatter. Mm-hmm. And that he cannot lose his lunch because there's DNA in that. So get out of here. Don't throw up. Take off your clothes. Get rid of them. And there you go.
However, he does leave and then loses lunch.
Immediately.
Immediately.
Yeah. I don't think he actually left the facility. He left that area, but still there. Yeah, thrown up. So when he gets home, he does at least take his clothes off, gets them in a garbage bag. He's there in just like his boxers for Alexa to walk in, because it's still that same evening that she was staying the night with him, and kind of wanting to know where he's at. He's playing it fine, like, oh, I just needed some water. And then she pushes a little more, and he's like, well, I just needed to drive. And she's like, I've been awake for an hour, and you haven't been here. So
calls him out.
Yeah, calls him out. She's a little upset. Finally, you know, it doesn't seem like he's there enough for her. Back at work, Melchek is testing the new doors. So they've got these doors up to lock the team into the area, so that way they're not roaming the hallways.
The number of times he checks these doors is hysterical.
He's checking the craftsmanship.
And not only does he test them several times, but he opens the door, goes to the other side, and then continues to test the doors.
Yeah. When Mark clocks in and gets down in the elevator, he's immediately greeted by Melchek, who is going to escort him to his office, because that's the new protocol. You guys have lost your privileges, basically, is what that comes down to.
You're grounded.
At Devin's house, Selvig is there again, instructing her on how to properly get the baby to latch. Did you notice how, like, nonchalant she was with the doll immediately after, just like...
She just threw it down.
Yeah.
She's like, you gotta be so kind and gentle, and then she throws it down.
Yeah. I feel like it'd be hard not to laugh if you're the person acting opposite her at that moment.
I know, yeah. She's hilarious.
And then she's kind of asking some questions about Mark, about Lumen. You know, she wants to know a little more information. She loves to pry.
Mark.
and asks if Mark ever thinks that he sees his wife, because when she lost her husband, she thought she saw him.
She's up to something.
Yeah.
Which, don't know yet.
Do you think she had a husband? You think that part was real?
I don't know. Like, she's so wrapped up in Keir, I don't know if she had a husband. Like, I can't see her with one.
But, like, maybe her husband was one of the Egans or something. And maybe he's severed and doesn't know her now.
Maybe.
I don't know. I feel like there's some truth in it.
It could be.
Back on the severed floor, Irving tries to get Mark to get them to go back to O&D. He's kind of coming up with some excuses and trying to get them out of there. Dylan finally has a reason to be angry other than just O&D. He wants to know his son. He wants to know his name. He wants to know about this kid. I mean, there's finally something more to Dylan than just the superficial wanting to be good at work and make wisecracks and get finger traps. It's almost like, you know, they say you like mature, you grow when you have a kid. And it's like the realization that he had the kid was almost the same thing. Like there was some maturation there for him. Heli has been doing much better at the refining. So they've been trying to get caught up on that and sort of play along for the numbers here, the refinement. And her performance now has granted her a music dance experience, MDE.
MDE.
They ask Heli what kind of music that she wants to play. And of course, she picks the episode's title.
Defiant Jazz.
Defiant Jazz. This is Melchek's time to shine.
It really is.
I mean, he moves. That dude can move. Mm-hmm. I'll grant him that. But the facial expressions while he's killing the dancing is like putting it over the top.
Yes.
And the way he's staring people down, Heli kind of looks like she's finally enjoying herself for once. Mm-hmm. It seems real to me, but I, you know, maybe it wasn't. Dylan, still thinking about his kid, still want just I can, it feels like it's circling in his mind.
He's still sitting out there at the computer like he's not wanting to participate at all.
Yeah. Melchek right behind him.
Right behind him.
Right behind him.
We get to see Mark kind of getting into the dance. He's got a little shuffle with his arms.
Yeah.
And he notices there's something in his pocket.
Yes, he does.
He finds Grainer's ID card that he apparently came in with.
Yeah, but that he did not put there. Mm-hmm. Or not he, him.
His any self didn't put there.
his outie self put it there.
Yeah.
But Dylan isn't having it. He's really mad at Melchek. Melchek didn't want to tell anyone else about that experience they had in Dylan's house. Mm. The red lights just start going crazy during the dance. And that shot of like the red light, like the anger, Dylan switching and just bam, he's on Melchek. And Melchek's like kind of a big dude. Just puts him on the floor with this like guttural, like pig scream that was, yeah. Puts him on the floor, bites into him, draws blood. And Melchek sounding panicked. He's biting me.
Get him off of me.
Get him off me.
And the music dance experience is officially canceled by Melchek.
Yeah, he said that all to them like it was this really petty, like, you guys don't understand what you gave up.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as he leaves and, of course, locks the door again, you love how many times he's closed this door.
Yeah.
But Dylan says, like, hey, they can wake us up outside of here. He talks about this overtime contingency. So the team is trying to build a plan to figure out more of what's going on, but they need the MacGuffin in order to advance that plot. And Mark just happens to have it, that key card that can miraculously get him anywhere he needs to go.
Mm-hmm. The black key card. All the other ones are blue and green.
Yeah. So they all leave, and Irving immediately goes straight to try to find Bert. He's worried about nothing else. But Helly and Mark enter the control room, and they see screens, and they see Cobell is arriving. So they go back to MDR, Helly carrying the instruction page. They've ripped this out to try to enact this overtime contingency when they're outside to try to basically spread this story, let people know what's going on. And Cobell is then pulled aside by Natalie, the woman who basically is a speaking voice for the board, and lets her know that Grainer's dead, and the board wants to know what is going on. So all this information she was trying to hold back and like wait till she had all her ducks in a row, now she can't. It's time to talk to the boss.
We haven't talked much about this, but the little speaker box they have for the board, who never says anything, is so weird. Natalie speaks for them, but we don't hear them talking at all.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, is it something she can actually hear? Does she have an earpiece in?
Looks like she has a microphone and an earpiece, but I don't know if it's just a microphone or not.
I would love to hear more about that for sure. So when Irvin gets to O&D, he sees there's a party going on.
A melon party.
Melon party, yeah. And it is not just the normal one. It is to commemorate Bert's retirement. So Bert is no longer going to be working at Lumen.
It's so sad.
And surely, yeah, this is all coincidental. Had nothing to do with anything going on between him and Irving. You know, Irving kind of throws a fit. Finally, he's the one talking about, it's like people are dead. Milchick sees it, is about ready to kick him out, and is like, how did you even get here? But Bert kind of calms him down, lets him stay for the party. But when they get back to MDR, they realize they're going to need two people to enact this plan where they can enact the overtime contingency. Except that Dylan says, I'm real strong.
I can do it.
I can do it. One guy. We're good.
He's like, I've seen my Audi self, so you guys can do it.
Yeah. We wrap up this episode with Mark back at home pouring himself another drink. We should be drinking when he's drinking or something. I don't know.
Yeah, have a drink counter.
Yeah. But we hear a knock at his door. I kind of thought it was going to be Cobell, to be honest with you, but it was Alexa coming back to get her phone that she left there. And Mark wants to kind of try to figure things out, but she's like, you're not ready for this. You're a mess. And I think that's probably done between those two now. At least it seems like it. Mm-hmm. But here's where we get one of the big reveals of the whole show, the one that gave me goosebumps when we were watching it. And I was like, holy crap. Because Mark is taping back this picture that he had ripped up saying, oh, I don't need to worry about my ex-wife, Gemma.
With this crazy grin on his face while he's doing it. My gosh. It was insane.
But he's taping this picture back together because he does still care a lot about his wife. His dead wife, Gemma.
Did you hear the music that was playing during that?
I did not.
I'll be seeing you.
And instead of this person that we have never seen before, when we get this picture reveal that takes kind of a minute there, I'm taking a minute here, it is actually Miss Casey.
Miss Casey. Of course, Audi Mark doesn't know who Miss Casey is, but
yeah,
we do.
We do. And what the heck?
And we go into this big part where Mark is talking about who his wife is, all the little things that she does. She sneezes twice. She doesn't like to wear sweaters. And he says something about, I love all these things about her equally.
Which is what she says to people when they are going through one of their wellness checks.
Yes, it's so cool how it wraps up like that.
Yeah. But that is going to go ahead and bring us into episode 8.
Episode 8, What's for Dinner? As Irving would say. The team prepares a plan, and Mark attends Devin and Rickon's party. We open on Audi Irving this time, and we haven't seen his Audi yet, and he has a dog with him. He's reading on a park bench, which appears to be outside of his home. He enters his house and begins painting with black paint while drinking coffee and listening to some rock music, which I didn't think was Irving's music of choice.
Yeah, he's getting some Motorhead in, which does not seem like what any Irving would be into at all.
He soon covers the entire canvas, and then we cue the theme song.
I love the way he's doing it. I mean, it's really manic how many he keeps painting, but I love like the really gritty palettes and different just pieces of things lying around that he's painting on. I think that's really cool.
Mm-hmm. And we kind of get a sense of where the black goo is coming from in his innies kind of dreams.
Yeah, lots and lots of black paint. And you had an observation on this particular part that I didn't notice at all.
I did. He is painting, his Audi is painting the elevator to the testing floor. And you thought it was the regular elevator, but there's this long hallway that we get to see in this episode that leads to this testing floor.
Yeah, I thought it was the break room, but good catch.
The Lumen team begins work, and Helly's working really fast because it's the end of the quarter. They're trying to meet their quota. Everybody is asking, are you going to make it, Helly? Are you going to make it? And she's like, I'll get there. Leave me alone. Let me work, because everybody else is already done.
Yeah, for the first time we've ever seen, she's super focused on the work.
Yeah. Milchick and Cobell watch on security cameras and are kind of concerned. They don't know if she's going to meet her quota as well. And then Cobell wants to schedule another wellness session for Mark, which Milchick doesn't think is a good idea. But we've seen thus far that Cobell has her own agenda with something that we don't know what that is yet.
She's definitely trying to find something out. That was one of my questions about this episode. Like, what is it that she does want? She's trying to tell something about what is bleeding through between Innie and Audie selves. But why does she need that? And, you know, what is she looking for, something in particular? Because it feels to me like it's something really specific.
Yeah.
Because they all know there's little bits and pieces. You know, Helly remembered Delaware. Mm-hmm. So they know, everyone knows there's little things that pass through. I think she's looking for something specific.
Helly finally hits her quota for the first time and gets to see an animated message from Keir Egan himself saying how proud he is of her.
Yeah, something from video game, like very video game looking in eras of like the late 90s or, mm-hmm. or maybe even mid 90s. Very rough looking animation.
It was so odd. He was like, I love you, Helly.
Yeah, it was definitely weird.
And then Irving looks at Mark and said, so it's on? We get to Mark in Mrs. Cobell's office, and they are laughing about how close it was to them not meeting quota. Cobell asks who should get the waffle party.
It reminds me of the sports quote that winning solves everything. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have players on your team complaining about playing time or not score enough points or something, they always say winning solves everything. If your team's winning, you know, you can get past these minor squabbles. So it feels like, hey, we completed the goal. Everybody's, you know, we dealt with some stuff, but we're doing good now.
And then Mrs. Cobell tells Mark that she wants him to drop by the wellness center, which she's having apparently all the department heads do, which is not true. When Mark goes to the wellness center, he notices that Mrs. Casey's room is bare, like she's packing up. He asks her what's going on, and she tells him that she'll be retiring.
And it seems like maybe there's just a little bit of sadness in her, even though she really wasn't one to show emotion.
Mm-hmm. Mark wants to, like, console her, ask questions, and kind of apologize because he feels it was his fault. But Miss Casey is just trying to do her job. She's like, I don't want any more missteps. But I think she kind of is grateful to him for the experience she has. Miss Casey starts talking about how many hours she's been in any, and it was 107 hours. I just thought it was crazy that she knew the exact number of hours that she's technically been alive for.
Maybe that's why she knows the exact time to walk to these certain areas, too. That's all very calculated for her.
Mm-hmm.
Makes me think that she is not awake in that form for 8 hours a day or 9 hours a day like they are. Because mm-hmm. otherwise it wouldn't be, you know, we're talking to just a couple weeks.
Yeah. We already know that Miss Cobell is watching them through the security cameras. And I don't think Milchick likes this at all. We get a really good scene with Miss Casey and Annie Mark in this scene. Because we kind of got a bombshell dropped on us last episode. So we kind of know that they were married. Are married. I don't know the term to use.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if she's legally pronounced dead, then I guess that nullifies it. Once they're done, Milchick takes Miss Casey to the dark hallway, which I thought, again, was the break room, but is leading to that testing floor. And you know that because of the red elevator marker there. And that's where, you know, you caught that. You're like, hey, I think that red is on that painting.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell that she does not want to go. She does not want to be there. And Milchick, also, you can tell, does not really care. He's like, all right, well, good riddance. You know, he's ready to move it all. So then he starts his way back to MDR to reward Dylan, to get that reward that he got for them making their quota. He's got the egg bar and another gift that he gives to Dylan that Dylan, for some reason, doesn't want to show anyone else in MDR.
Mm-hmm.
So they have this, the egg party, and Dylan definitely says, like, hey, I'm the one staying behind. We've got our plan in action. We stole the page. We know how to do the overtime contingency. Let's get going. We switch over to Cobell, and she runs into Natalie waiting for her. And the board is not happy because they've got pictures of this attempted suicide. And mm-hmm. so they want to know all what's going on. And Cobell's like, hey, I've been wanting to talk to them. You know, like, she's trying to turn it around on her, but doesn't matter. Natalie lets her know that the board says that she is no longer with the company.
Dang. Let go. I thought this was, I think this is the moment where she's like, is the board even there? And for the first time, we hear a little voice that says, yes, over the speaker, that we've never heard anybody from the board talk before.
Yeah, it's always been through Natalie.
Or no one talks at all.
Yeah. So, Helly and Mark are kind of going over the plans when Milchick just comes in and is like, hey, party's over. I got business to attend to. You're done.
Mm-hmm.
You're done.
You're done.
And he says it's a management issue, but really he's just going to go walk Cobell out of the building, which he kind of seems, you know, I don't know if happy is the right word, but maybe a little relieved about.
Yeah. And even like, because she's always, recently she's been on her own little agenda. And I think he's very by the book, seems like.
Maybe it's that, or maybe it's just that he doesn't want to get his neck on the line for anything.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Or that now that she's gone, he's more in charge.
Yeah, maybe there's a promotion opportunity there. Before Mark and Helly leave, Helly kind of makes a point to say, hey, you know, thank you for what you've done, and makes a secondary point to hop out of the elevator and give Mark a kiss in case, you know, we don't see each other later, or in case we do.
Mm-hmm.
So waffle party is happening right after that. They switch into this waffle party. Dylan's eating them. They look, you know, they look decent. It's what happens immediately after that that is...
not so decent.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. He might be into that too.
Mm-hmm.
On a different day. Seemed like today maybe he was not, but...
The plate after he's done eating says go to the bed, which they've never been allowed to sit on before.
Yeah.
I guess only during waffle parties.
Yeah. So he gets some scantily clad, mostly females, but there's one dude there doing this semi-erotic, weird, hypnotic dance for him as they move a little closer, seeming like there's going to be something happening.
With these weird masks, I think one was a goat or a ram. One was like a nursemaid or something. And then Dylan has to wear the one that's up here.
Yeah, like they were dancing for Dylan, but they were really dancing for Keir.
Yeah.
So Cobell on the drive home goes on full on Cruella de Vil, just screaming, and is like, now she's just a straight up villain. She goes, smashes her little shrine up that she had sitting at home. And when she gets a ring at the door shortly after that, Mark is there. And wants to know if he wants to ride with him to the party at his sister's place for that book reading.
Mm-hmm.
She said that she's going to drive separately, so it kind of feels like we're heading towards something, because we know Dylan's got something planned, and now you're going to have multiple people from Lumen in this same spot.
Mm-hmm.
So Dylan does make it to that control room. He sets down the gift. We finally get to see... It's a hologram of the team.
Oh, so sweet.
Yeah. It was sweet. It was cool. Like, it did feel like a little bit of a weird, like, why'd they have to hide that?
Mm-hmm.
But
maybe he just didn't want everybody to know he likes them.
Yeah, yeah. But he struggles hard as he takes all these steps listed in that page. But he does, with great physical stretching. Yes, I'm surprised he's able to do it. But he's able to switch both switches at the same time and enact the overtime contingency right as we head into episode 9.
Dun, dun, dun. Some observations that I noticed, we get to see a little bit of the control room where he's activating this overtime contingency. We have to see all the steps he has to go through, and they list some other, as he's scrolling to get to the overtime contingency, we see some other contingencies that are there.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote two of them down that I saw. One was an open house contingency. Don't know what that implies. And then a lullaby contingency, which seems like they can put them to sleep randomly.
Yeah. That seems like it would, to me, seems like maybe it's completely, like both sides of them are asleep.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder if, because Miss Casey was sent to this testing floor instead of sent home, if they enact the lullaby contingency for her or other workers that don't go home.
It definitely seems that way, because she's only been awake, you know, 108 hours, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of seems like maybe the open house is the opposite of the overtime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you think open house, you're bringing people in to work to look at, or into the, you know.
Yeah.
So maybe they are bringing the Audis any? I don't know. But we're going to go ahead and go into episode 9.
Episode 9 is titled The We Are. This is the season finale, and the team discovers troubling revelations.
So this episode is really kind of a lot of camera switches back and forth, because Irving, Helly, and Mark are all waking up as their innie selves out in the Audi world, and they all have to try to accomplish this mission where they're trying to like warn somebody about what's happening at Lumen, try to get the word out, the news out. I don't think anyone is really all that successful, at least to start.
No.
But they kind of keep going back and forth, and you feel like that tension building. Something's happening. Something's happening. Something's happening. Mm-hmm. Mark, at the beginning, we find out, is already at the party. And that's when he undergoes that switch. He sees his boss, already weird.
He's in mid-hug with her, actually.
Yeah. And he actually plays it fairly cool, honestly, but, you know, kind of walking around, does not do a good job, I think, of like asking questions about what's going on, because some of those, someone should have been like, is he, like, does he have a concussion? Like, what is going on?
Drunk? Yeah. Something.
Which I guess he is a drinker, so maybe that wasn't that surprising. Yeah. But he finally figures out he's got a sister, and he's trying to ask questions about that. Who am I? Where am I? You know, he's not asking who am I, but it's clearly questions to get that. So Helly wakes up at a party in a much different atmosphere of party than what Mark is at. Very formal, very expensive.
And she's talking to Miss Natalie, who's the board's spokesperson.
And Natalie sounds very different. Natalie is very friendly and very welcoming to her. Mm-hmm. It's not like the board will talk to you now.
Yeah.
Helly is introduced to Gabby Arteta. That is the wife, that rich wife that Devin talked to. Mm-hmm. And so we see this is a gala at
Lumen.
Lumen. So, and I think this is one of the times that you notice the theme song playing.
Mm-hmm. We hear that Helly has to give a speech in 20 minutes as she's trying to figure out where she is and who to, she can trust to share her secrets with. As Helly is being introduced to Gabby, we hear Natalie introduce her as Helena Egan.
Yeah, pretty big reveal there.
Yeah, huge. We get a clip of Dylan back in the control room, fighting for his life, trying to hold his arms across the room to hold these switches. And looks like he's struggling a bit.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, it's full out stretch.
Mm-hmm. And I think we get a little glimpse of his little picture. He's like looking at the picture like, you guys got this. You can do it.
I'm doing it for you.
Yeah. Mark goes into an empty room and he's trying to figure out where he is. And he gets interrupted by Devin. He goes out and says, is this our baby?
And with their like super jovial relationship they have, like, she thinks he's just kidding around,
but he finds out that that's his sister and his sister's baby later on. Mark asks Devin if they can talk, and Devin says, I promise we can talk later, because it's time to listen to Rickon read through his new book.
And pretty much everyone there seems to be super into it. Mm-hmm. Or at least faking that they're into it.
I think once Mark figures out what they're there to read, he gets super into it too. He's like, oh, yeah, I love this guy.
Yeah. I know all your best work.
Mm-hmm. Then we see Irving back at home, and it's his any version of him. He's exploring his home. He sees his dog named Radar, which was one of the things about his Audi that Miss Casey had shared.
Yeah, that he likes the sound of radar. As he's searching through his own house, he sees a bunch of military memorabilia, war medals, a Navy uniform, and then he finds this trunk that at the bottom of it, he sees what looks like parts of an investigation into Lumen, an employee listing, and
a map with everybody's addresses and where they live on it.
Which, obviously, he then looks up Bert's.
Yeah, of course.
We cut back to the party at Rickon and Devin's house, where he's reading the book. Rickon is reading the book. And Cobell is reading the same book along with Mark, but it's actually Rebecca's book. Mm-hmm. Rebecca is probably not real happy about that. She didn't seem to love the idea that Mark was along with her anyway. But then we switch back real quickly again to the Lumen event, and this is really setting in for her how big of a deal she is. Now, she's a big part of the Lumen family.
Huge deal.
She is one of the high up Yeagans, and so she is now going to have the chance at this speech that she's about to have to hopefully do some damage.
I just remember her walking kind of through the event, seeing her picture plastered everywhere, pictures of her and the rest of the team of MDR, the ones that we see Milchick taking the entire time she's there. I remember mentioning that I thought it was weird that during her severance process, he was taking her picture, and now I know why he was.
Back with Mark, he gets a chance to speak to Rickon. I mean, basically the rock star idol of his life right now, of his short life. He doesn't have much else to look up to, so it's kind of understandable, I guess, that anyone who's written a book other than an Egan is going to leave an imprint.
Yeah.
But as he is walking away from him, he runs into Miss Cobell when he's going to go speak with his sister. And he makes the mistake, which he doesn't realize is a mistake, because he doesn't know she goes by two different names, mm-hmm. of saying Miss Cobell to her, which instantly she knows that something's up.
I thought he had it, too, that he was going to slip by the whole time, and then all of a sudden, I'll talk to you later, Miss Cobell. I was like, dang it, you blew it.
Yeah. Helly watches herself give a speech about how great Severance is, how amazing it was to grow up as a member of the Egan family. And we see Cobell being Cruella de Vil again, speeding off in her car. And as she does, we get the thought that maybe she is taking the baby that she was holding.
Yeah.
Devin's baby.
And she's called Milchick all frantic, telling him about how they have enacted the overtime contingency.
Yeah, and then he starts running off trying to get into that room to shut all that down.
Mm-hmm. We cut back to Helly, and she goes into the bathroom kind of panicking. She's trying to figure out what she's going to say on stage, and an old man quickly comes into the bathroom, revealing that he is her father, Mr. Egan.
Yeah, and they have this discussion and talks about her one day sitting with him at his revolving, which is an interesting term.
Did his voice sound familiar to you at all?
No, I got the feeling that maybe it was the same voice from the board that talked to Miss Cobell.
Me too.
But I don't know that. I'm not 100%. I kind of want to go check the audio side by side, but when Helly stares at herself in the mirror, she starts to repeat that statement that she was forced to read in the break room. And the only thing I could think as she was doing that was that she means it this time. Mm-hmm. Like, she is sorry about the trouble that she has caused. Any part she had in this, it seems like that she's actually apologetic for.
We cut to Irving And he is getting dressed and rushes out because he is going to go see Bert.
Yeah. And it takes him a minute to get that car going because this version of him has never driven a car. But it really didn't take crazy long, you know, considering he hasn't driven before. So he gets going.
We notice that he passes Cobell on his way there. Obviously, he doesn't know, but
that felt like a cartoon moment. Mm-hmm. The way they cut that.
We get to Milchick. He finally gets to the security office, and he is trying to get in the door, but Dylan has tied his belt around the door.
The second time he's done that.
Dude in his belt.
Yeah. And he's trying to like butter him up with all these like little treats. He's gonna, you know. Waffle party and finger traps and whatever else you want, man. Just let me through the door.
Yeah, and Dylan's like, I just want to see my kid and know more about my kid. And Milchick says, well, you got three more, and I can tell you about them if you just open the door.
Yeah. Or two more. I think it was two. I think it was two, but he has more children. I tell you all about them.
I almost feel like that was just a desperate plea to get him to open the door. I don't know that he has two other children. That's true. Feel like he was just doing whatever he could.
So we go back to the dinner party, and Mark is finishing up what he's talking to Devin about. And Devin starts telling Mark about his ex-wife, or his late wife, excuse me. And I love that Devin immediately believed Mark.
Yeah, she didn't question it for 1 minute. Like, I'm sure it was overwhelming, but she was a really good team player.
Even though, like, everyone else is kind of seeing these as two different people. Helly's dad is like, I hate what she did to you. Mm-hmm. They're different. But Devin's like, that's my brother. He's not lying to me. Mm-hmm. You know, he's gonna make some dry, you know, dark humor, but he doesn't lie to me.
Yeah.
So Mark then asks, like, why is, you know, his boss there? And so she's like, you mean Mrs. Selvig? And so that's when they realize that, like, oh, what did she do with the baby? Mm-hmm. You know, we had already been kind of thinking it for a minute, and then it's like, oh, no, where is the baby at? So Devin's going crazy, room to room, where is the baby?
Yeah.
Everyone in the building trying to figure out where she's at.
Mark goes into a room and is like, is the baby in here? And I love how Rickon's friend, is it Rickon's friend or Devin's friend?
I'm sure it's Rickon's, the way he acts, yeah.
Goes in front of him and is like, I found the baby.
It was all me. So we cut back to Milchick again, another quick cut because he's taking that knife, trying to cut the belt. And, he starts sawing through that belt of Dylan's, trying to get into that room. So you know it's, at this point, a matter of time. They don't have much time left to get this message across. Mm-hmm. He says that the only perk that he really wants is to remember his son being born. So sounds like reintegration to me, if it's anything. So Irving does end up finding Bert's house and drives up and is looking through the front window like a creeper and sees him celebrating his retirement with another man. When we switch back to Helly about to give that speech, she basically is like accosted physically by Cobell, and she's like, is it you? Like asking, are you the inner you? Mm-hmm. And Helly's like, hey, I'm gonna take Lumen down.
I'm going to kill your company.
So, and she just tells her, like, hey, it's going to be your friends that suffer. You know, you're an Egan. You're not going to deal with it. Everyone else inside is going to be the one suffering if you do this. Mm-hmm. Helly just walks right out, and she starts telling everyone that Severance is a lie. It is not sunshine and roses down there. And we can tell, like, it's getting tenser. We switch back to Mark.
And he's still in the same room where they found the baby, but he's getting ready to walk out, and he sees a picture of him and his late wife and recognizes the person in the photo as Miss Casey.
Yeah. And I got goosebumps immediately. Mm-hmm. He grabs the picture and starts running out to tell his sister, she's alive!
But then Ms. Chick gets through the belt of the door and tackles Dylan.
And then they all switch back to their outer selves. And that ends season one.
Some observations I had. I really enjoyed the flickers of the transition in here. It reminded me of the intro when it's flickering from different models of Adam Scott.
Yeah, and had that kind of feedback-y sound.
I don't think we ever know Irving's last name, but I saw it written on one of the things in his home. Irving Bailiff. And Miss Cobell normally calls Milchick Seth, but when she was angry calling him on the phone, she called him Milchick.
Yeah, I guess I didn't really think about that. My only real question about this was, what is the revolving? And the only thing I can think is, if I'm just thinking about what it sounds like, it just sounds like you're being revolved around, you're being phased in or phased out. And when I think that of that, like of a severance, it almost makes me think like maybe there's periods of time where they're kept alive longer than normal because there's periods of time where they're just in suspended animation, maybe.
That's interesting. I don't think I ever would have thought about it that way.
So as we look at the end of season one and season two coming up tomorrow, or did already come up, depending on when you're listening to this episode, you know, that's one thing that I'm wondering about going into that. I'm wondering if we get a chance to see the outer cells inside Lumen. I think it'd be kind of fun to see the opposite. And I'd really love to see kind of what happens to a lot of these characters. I don't think we're going to see Alexa again, personally.
Probably not. She's kind of done. She doesn't have anything to do with Devin anymore since she has her baby. So yeah, I don't think we'll see Alexa again.
I do think we're going to see at least one, if not a couple of the characters, find some way to at least initiate reintegration, whether or not it's exactly the same way Petey did or if it is, you know, another way.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's going to be at least starting that. Maybe not, you know, maybe it's by the end of the season.
Well, I was kind of thinking that we had talked about the voice on the speaker being Mr. Egan's voice, and I kind of wonder maybe if he is the only one that is technically on the board. That one voice we heard, it wasn't a collective of voices, and he talked about he was crying in bed, so I wonder if he just can't be up and around. That's why he's speaking through a monitor or speaking through Natalie, because he's just old and he doesn't get out that often anymore.
Yeah, and he could be real old if they have his body in suspended animation for big periods of time.
Probably Keir too, somewhere.
It could probably be like another Apple TV Plus show, Foundation, where the leaders of the main organization there, they're just clones of each other, and there's always a young, a middle, and an old version of that leader. All three of them are the same person. And like maybe there's some kind of thing where they revolve, that revolving is like, now this person's leading, and now this person's leading, and then the other ones are asleep.
That would be crazy. You should write a script for it.
I think if that's the answer, then that script's already written. But what are some predictions that you have for season two?
I think we will hopefully figure out what goes on with these goats.
Yeah, that's a good one. And we know they're at least going to be in it because we did see the trailer for season two. So.
Yeah, in a bigger room that they were walking through with these goats.
I want to see some frolicking for sure.
Frolicking.
Yeah.
And I hope that we figure out what's going on with Cobell and why she had her own little agenda. It kind of bugged me that she got fired, but she still cared that these innies were on the outside. So I'd like to know a little bit more about that, too.
Yeah, either some deep devotion to Keir, to an Egan, or deep devotion to that job, or to the idea of severance, or there's, it feels like there's some kind of emotional tie.
So, yeah, something.
And honestly, I just want to spend a day with Dylan on the outside.
That would be great.
I want to see. So we are both really excited to see what is going to happen in season two.
Thank you guys so much for listening to our recap podcast for Severance season one. And we can't wait to watch season two. Please call us on our podline, 415 podline, or you can text us. Let us know your predictions of season two and what you guys thought of season one. And we'll see you guys next time. Later.
Bye. They